Hello, this is Ken Barron. I'm with the National Association of Black and White Men Together. Our podcast today is on two topics which are near and dear to our hearts, racism and homophobia, and what's happening this week. The National Association of Black and White Men Together for over 40 years has brought the news of the suffering of black men and the lives of gay men who have to hide their sexual identity. We gathered together two stories in this area of interest and in recent events. First, on racism. Vandals tore down a Black Lives Matter banner and a sign from two historic black churches in downtown Washington and set the banner ablaze as nighttime clashes between pro-Donald Trump supporters and counter-demonstrators erupted into violence and arrests. Police on Sunday said they were investigating the incidents at the Ashbury United Methodist Church and the Metropolitan AME Church as potential hate crimes, which one religious leader likened to a cross-burning. A video posted on Twitter showed a group of men appearing to take down a Black Lives Matter sign at the Metropolitan AME Church as others in the crowd shout, "Whose streets? Our streets." This is reminiscent, again, of cross-burnings and that the evil has reared its ugly head again. Leaders of the Black Lives Matter organization decried the attacks on the churches, partly faulting the police for allowing white supremacists to run rampant. The incidents came following weekend rallies in support of Trump's baseless claim that he won the second term, which led to dozens of arrests, several stabbings, and injuries to police officers. Police in the District of Columbia said they had arrested nearly 30 people for a variety of offenses, from assaults to weapons possession and resisting arrest and rioting. The violence broke out after sundown Saturday. Four men were stabbed around 10 p.m. after a fight downtown, police said. At least one suspect, 29-year-old Philip Johnson of Washington, was arrested on a charge of assault with a dangerous weapon. A police report obtained by the Associated Press said at least one of the victims identified Johnson as a person who stabbed him. Trump loyalist gatherings were intended as a show of force just 2 days before the Electoral College met to formally elect Democrat Joe Biden as the 46th president. Trump, whose term will end in January 20th, refuses to concede while clinging to unfounded claims of fraud that have been rejected by state and federal courts and last Friday by the Supreme Court. A pro-Trump demonstration last month, which drew 10,000 to 15,000 people to the Capitol, also ended late on that Saturday night with scattered clashes between Trump's allies and local activists near Black Lives Matter Plaza near the White House. But while Saturday's rallies included one on Freedom Plaza downtown, they were smaller than on November 14th, and they drew a larger contingent of the so-called Proud Boys, a neo-fascist group known to incite street violence. Some wore bulletproof vests as they marched through town. On the second topic of homosexuality, it's a little bit more interesting, less violent, and it's on the topic of gay careers, since there is a new book by John Birdsall about James Beard, the famous American food critic and a gay man. This gives a lens to Beard's life, braiding the strands of privilege and pain, performance and anxiety into an entirely new story. He had a huge impact on American cultural life, yet lived with such fear of being exposed as a gay man. The food of the United States wasn't then considered a true cuisine like that of France, China, Japan, or Italy, where traditions were built over centuries. But the American melting pot had been combining ingredients through generations of immigration. And in the counterculture of the 1970s, the idea of the global palate was filtering into the mainstream, sweeping Chinese cooking classes, Indian spice blends, Japanese pottery into the U.S. kitchens. But most chefs and others who have known Beard throughout his countless books, columns, and television appearances have no idea of Beard's messy parts of his story. In his childhood, Beard suffered because of his size, the expulsion from college because of a single-sex act, the anxiety he lived with as a gay celebrity when coming out was unthinkable. And there are troubling parts. Plagiarization and taking credit for other people's recipes, accepting paid endorsements for product that he did not always believe in, and exposing himself to and fondling young men who hoped for his professional support. Born in 1903, Beard was an only child raised mostly by his mother, Elizabeth Beard, who was famous for her cooking at the elegant boarding house she ran, the Gladstone. In the days of oyster patties, roast pheasant, and charlotte russe, the person who did most of the actual kitchen work was Juliette, a masterly cook from Guangdong, who worked at the Gladstone and then in the Beard family home for more than a decade. In Beard's memory, his mother made all the rules. Only certain strains of fruits were allowed into the house. She would not dream of using canned vegetables. Venison wasn't worth the trouble, and so on. The willingness to be opinionated that he learned from her helped him become one of the great food voices of his century. In most of Beard's writing, he was pushing the story of a grand happy boyhood holiday, the author of the book said. But at the glorious duck dinners and mince pie feasts that Beard describes, he was usually the sole child present. His father, who had avoided his mother's racy friends, was often absent, and Beard learned to perform for the crowd as he felt compelled to do for the rest of his life. Quote, "I soon became as precocious and nasty a child as ever inhabited Portland," he wrote in his memoir. There never seems to have been a time when Beard was comfortable in his own skin. He knew as he was gay from a very young age. The first public airing of his gay identity was traumatic. In his freshman year at Reed College, he was caught by his roommates in a sexual encounter with a professor and summarily expelled, a double humiliation that he never entirely recovered from. This meant he was effectively also banished from home, albeit with a wide socioeconomic safety net. He sailed to Europe, discovered the gay underground in London and Paris, moved to New York, and began his food careers in the 1930s, catering parties thrown by Manhattan's gay and art world elites. Even as he became confident and successful, Beard always carried shame about his size. 6 feet 3 inches tall, he often weighed more than 350 pounds in adulthood. For the last 30 years of his life, his legs had to be tightly wrapped in bandages and compression stockings because of the chronic edema and varicose vein. And according to Mr. Birdsall's research, Beard had a lifelong condition called phimosis, a too tight foreskin that makes erections extremely painful. That made Beard's feeling about sex and his body even more complicated. And so, though he had many friends in the food world, and enemies too, Beard had just a few intimate partners over the course of his life. It wasn't until the 1970s, when he settled into fame and some wealth, that he achieved the stability that allowed him to buy a townhouse in Greenwich Village with his partner, Gino Cofaggi, and come into his own as a host. Thank you for listening. Those were two stories that linked together some of our efforts in the National Association of Black and White Men Together. Stay safe, hope to hear from you soon, and visit us on all of our Facebooks, Twitter, and nabwmt.org. If you want to listen to us, please do so. You can also email us at nabwmt@nabwmt.org. Thank you.